Hello and welcome to the Medical Women Podcast, the world's first podcast aimed at supporting and empowering medical women in their careers. I'm Dr. Nuthana Bayankaram, and it's my honour and joy to be your host as each week we speak to a fantastic guest who's here to help us in our careers. I'm Vice President of the Medical Women's Federation, the largest body of women doctors in the UK, and the voice of medical women on medical issues. Join us as each week we hear about a topic that's helpful for all of us in our careers. Hello everyone, a very warm welcome to this week's episode of the Medical Women Podcast. Can't quite believe it's April already, time seems to be flying. And I guess when we're thinking about spring and sort of this time of year, it's, you know, everything is kind of like go, 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 like winter's finished and now we're into spring. But actually, a lot of us haven't had enough rest over winter and might be entering the second quarter of the year feeling quite depleted and exhausted. So this episode is going to really help you with that. So this week's guest is Dr. Claire Ashley, who is a GP and a burnout specialist. And in this episode, Claire speaks to us about the different forms of burnout, how we can recognize it, but also how we can prevent it and how we can look after ourselves if we are feeling burnt out. So I hope you find this episode really helpful. Please do share it with all of your colleagues. This week on the 7th of April is World Health Day, so it's a really important time for us all to be thinking about how we can be healthy, because we can't pour from an empty cup. I think we've really learned that from the pandemic, that we have to look after ourselves. And of course it is now in the GMC guidance that we have a duty as doctors to look after ourselves so that we can look after other people. So I hope you really enjoy this episode. And very exciting, we are approaching our MWF Spring Conference on the 10th of May, which is going to be in Cambridge. We've got a fantastic lineup of speakers, including previous podcast guests, Ms. Samantha Truss, Dr. Rachel Morris, as well as Professor Dame Leslie Regan, and a huge array of amazing speakers and our oral abstract presenters and lots of posters. And I have to say, a couple of weeks ago, I had the honour and very difficult task of marking the abstracts alongside the rest of the conference committee. And it was a very, very difficult task because all the abstracts were amazing. So I'm really looking forward to seeing everybody's posters and really looking forward to seeing everyone in person. It's so nice. It's lovely to connect via the podcast, but it is very much one way. And I don't really get to hear from you. So that's what I really like about face-to-face. It's lovely to have that two-way conversation. So we have still got tickets left for the conference. I'll pop a link in the show notes. It would be amazing to see you all in Cambridge. In the meantime, enjoy this episode and I'll see you again soon. So it's lovely to have with me today, Dr. Claire Ashley. Claire, welcome to the podcast. Would you be able to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Thank you so much for inviting me onto the podcast today, Nuthana. So yeah, I'm Dr. Claire Ashley. I'm a GP. I'm an NHS clinical entrepreneur, and I'm also a burnout survivor and expert. And burnout is very much my specialist subject. And as a result of being on my burnout journey, I now have a very significant following on social media. And I have just founded a startup specializing in burnout prevention and burnout recovery. So it's very much a topic that is close to my heart. I'm also a charity ambassador for Doctors in Distress. So mental health advocacy is something that's also really important to me.
Amazing. And you're doing amazing work in the burnout space. And we were just speaking before we started recording that the latest GMC trainee survey shows the highest levels of burnout since I started doing the survey. So we know that it's really prevalent amongst healthcare professionals. And so it's so important that we recognize it, we look after people who are burnt out, and that we prevent it. It would be great to hear a bit more about how you got to where you are now, and if you wouldn't mind sharing a bit of your own burnout journey with us.
Yeah, of course. So I sailed through medical school and my postgraduate training without ever having a mental health problem. And I thought that my coping strategies and my stress management skills were pretty good as a result of that. However, I unraveled quite quickly within the period of about 6 months as I started my first job as a fully qualified GP. So I'd gone from being in a training program where I was really well supported, functioning really well, into a job where, our workload was basically uncapped. And there were a huge combination of factors actually that made that job incredibly stressful. But it was a vulnerable time anyway, because I was transitioning from being fully supported, having an educational supervisor, and having a training program that was absolutely wonderful. Actually, I had a brilliant training experience. Into the fire, in a very, very busy GP surgery with huge, huge patient need and patient demand. And it took about 6 months for me to unravel, which I think in the grand scheme of things is actually quite a short period of time thinking about it, during which I kind of knew that there was something going wrong. But I did the classic medic thing of blaming myself. There were huge amounts of guilt and shame associated with what was happening. I entirely blamed myself. And I did what we're taught to do since day one of medical school, which is if you've got a problem, you just work harder. And if you work really hard and you throw yourself in, you commit yourself to your work, you commit yourself to your patients and your work fully, you can overcome anything. And that's what I did, is I started to work harder at the same time as blaming myself for not being able to cope. And as a result, that just perpetuated the spiral into burnout. And at the time, I didn't know what burnout was. I didn't know it had a name. And it was only after I hit a burnout crisis, a mental health crisis, that I had the opportunity to stop, step back, make some changes. And it was only going on my recovery journey, which has been supported by practitioner health, I've come to realize that there was a name for what I was experiencing, and that, it wasn't my fault at the end of the day. Because the thing about burnout is that there are lots of things that put you at risk of it. So everyone carries their own internal risk factors for burnout, largely to do with our personality. So it's things like imposter syndrome, perfectionism, previous trauma, mixed messages about achievement in childhood, being a type A personality. I mean, if we're medics, we're all sitting there going tick, 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 right? we're of a certain personality type, and that primes us for burnout. But some of us are more susceptible than others. And then you also need the external pressure. So you need the pressure at work. By definition, you don't burn out without that sustained, uncontrolled, unmanaged stress at work. So it's a combination of things that lead you to be in that place. So I recognize now that I had lots of risk factors for it, but it was the uncontrolled pressure at work that tipped me over the edge into a crisis. And it's been a long recovery journey. So the thing about burnout is, if you end up in a crisis, it takes 1 to 3 years on average to recover. It's a tough recovery journey. It takes time. And I've learned a lot about what it really takes to recover. And it's hard, The solutions that we currently have for burnout are not sufficient. Going on a mental health training webinar, doing some resilience training, don't get me started on the R word. It absolutely does my head in. It makes me very ragey. This is not sufficient. You have to tackle the systemic factors, the workplace stress, the structures that the systemic reasons why people are burning out, as well as tackling your own internal risk factors as well. And that's very, very challenging.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us, Claire. And you mentioned there that you didn't. It's not until afterwards that you realise that you were actually burnt out.
Yeah,
I wonder if you can tell us like a few of the, a few of the kind of signs and symptoms of burnout, because I suspect lots of people, this will resonate with lots of people, but we might not actually realise that we are burnt out.
Yeah, so the thing about recognizing if you're burnt out at an early stage is that it makes recovery that much easier. So if you hit a full-blown burnout crisis, as I said, 1 to 3 years to recover, people need on average 3.5 months off work sick, but some people need up to a year. So getting yourself at an earlier stage, if you can, is really, really important. But we are terrible as medics at doing this. And there's so much irony involved, right? Because we spend our lives caring for others, but we're really terrible at looking after ourselves until we end up in a crisis. And so it's really key that you get yourself at an early stage. So with burnout, the definition of burnout, there are three things that comprise it. The first one is emotional exhaustion. And I think that's something that a lot of us identify with, particularly as healthcare professionals. The second one is this thing called depersonalization. So that's the cynicism and the apathy that comes with burnout. So it's the fatigue of caring for too much for too long. It's when you get that disconnect between caring for your work, and then you kind of go over that and you end up in this weird sense of disconnect. And it's a very odd thing to experience. Having experienced it myself, it's very difficult to describe, but you both care too much and not at all. But at that stage, you will still be going to work. You'll still be turning up. You'll still be going through the motions despite feeling that disconnect internally. And then the third component is reduced professional efficacy. So that means reduced performance at work in whatever form that takes. So for instance, we know that burnt out doctors are more likely to be involved in patient complaints and to make mistakes at work. In my own burnout, I didn't make any errors that put patients at risk, luckily. But what I did struggle with was decision fatigue and concentration. So I ended up taking much longer over decisions that previously I would have made very, very quickly. And I ruminated and I obsessed over the decisions that I was making because I knew I wasn't thinking in the same way. And I didn't want to cause any harm to my patients. You know, that was really important to me. But you know, when I ended up in a crisis, I basically ticked every single box of a mental health crisis bar suicidal ideation. So I had extreme panic, anxiety, I wasn't sleeping, I had a lot of intrusive thoughts, I was self-neglecting, and my head was just a total mess, and my confidence was destroyed. And the only way I can describe what it was like to live inside my head was it was just exhausting and absolutely desperate. And one of the things that people get in burnout is that you get this emotional dysregulation. So small stresses, small things, you know, that you pre-burnout you could deal with really well, you just fly off the handle basically about, because your emotions are so dysregulated. But obviously, ending up in that crisis point, there had been warning signs in the lead up to it that I had missed. And this is very, very typical of burnout. So what I'll just do now is I'll just talk you through the different stages of burnout and how most people experience it. So the first stage of burnout is it's called the honeymoon phase. So it's characterized by enthusiasm for your work. It's, you know, you're full of enthusiasm, commitment, you get a lot of joy out of your work, you're incredibly productive, and you just basically throw yourself in, and you're full of energy. But that sounds great. But the risk with the honeymoon phase is that if you're not boundaried enough, if you take on too much, and if you kind of end up overworking, that you'll end up progressing to the second stage, which is the onset of stress. So in this stage, what you start to notice is that some days are more stressful than others, and you start to lack time to look after yourself. You might socially withdraw, so seeing your friends and family less, and you feel like your job is the most important thing in your life. So you end up starting to overcommit to your work. And you might start to notice some physical symptoms at this stage. So you might get a bit of anxiety, might get headaches, for instance. You might start to have some psychological symptoms. You might have some difficulty focusing or concentrating. Then the third stage is chronic stress. So this is when your stress levels are becoming really frequent, persistent, and constant. And in this stage, it's when people really start to notice the symptoms are becoming more significant. So your problem solving skills, your performance starts to decrease, your productivity decreases, you might start to feel like you're a bit out of control, a bit powerless, you might start to procrastinate, you feel overwhelmed, start to feel like you're not performing very well at your job, and then you start to feel all of this guilt. And medics, hello, ding ding ding, we're very, very good at the guilt and the shame. And you start to feel like you're a failure. And the physical and the mental symptoms might start to become worse as well. So for instance, you might start to get more minor infections as your immune system becomes suppressed because of the chronic stress. Might struggle to regulate your emotions, and you might distance yourself more from your friends and your family. And in this stage, sometimes people do start to self-medicate. So we know that medics do have like higher than average problems with substance misuse. And unfortunately, we know that medics are more at risk of dying by suicide as well. So a 3 to 5 times higher suicide rate, and women are more disproportionately affected by suicide than men. So we're the only profession actually where women are more at risk than men. And then the fourth stage is burnout itself. And the fifth stage is habitual burnout. So what you want is to get yourself in the first two stages and make changes at that point to protect yourself from progressing to full-blown burnout. So I've already described the symptoms. And apathy really is the key emotion of the fourth stage, which is burnout. And then habitual burnout is where you're unable to recover from it. So what you're experiencing becomes habitualized. You can't bring yourself back to normal. You know, having time off work doesn't, you know, restore yourself to where you were previously. Work feels incredibly challenging. It affects every aspect of your life, your personal life, your work. You don't have enjoyment in your hobbies anymore. You might feel sad, depressed, anxious at this point. And at that point, that's when you need to have external help to recover. So I think for medics, we find it very hard to recognize the early stage of burnout, but hopefully in sharing the recognized stages of it, you know, perhaps some of the people that are listening today might have the opportunity to reflect on those stages and recognize whether or not they might be there. And that might be an opportunity to make some changes and really prevent that slide into burnout.
Thank you, Claire. That's a really helpful overview of burnout and the kind of different stages of it. So you mentioned there that if we can kind of catch ourselves in stage one and two, we can prevent the burnout getting worse and also the recovery.
Yeah.
So what are your top tips for how we can prevent things from getting worse in that stage? Or those stages?
Yeah, it's a really great question. So I think there's a lot to say here, actually. So first of all, I think we have to think about what it is that we do as individuals to look after ourselves. The first thing I'd say is you have to have a way of checking in with yourself, a regular way of checking in with yourself, so that you recognize when stress is becoming too much. I didn't do this before I burnt out, but now I do it regularly and it works. And I know that it works because actually my burnout recovery journey has been very up and down. I did have a second slide post-pandemic, but I caught myself much earlier because I was journaling regularly and because I was regularly checking in with myself. So I think having some way of monitoring your stress levels is really helpful. And how you do this, I think, is entirely up to you, what works for you. So I know that some people wear smartwatches, and smartwatches can monitor your stress levels and can alert you when your stress levels are getting too high or if you're not sleeping very well. I like to use this thing called the stress continuum. So it's a table that is color-coded with different emotions in it. And then you can work out on a regular basis which column you sit in. And had I been doing that into my slide into burnout, I would have seen myself going from green to yellow to orange to red. Red is crisis, obviously. So it's color-coded. It makes it really easy. And then it's really good for monitoring recovery because then you see yourself heading back towards the green side of the table. I do actually have that on my Substack channel. So perhaps, Nathana, I could share the article where I've got this table on there and people can go and have a look at it.
Yes, thank you. That'd be great.
Yeah. And journaling. Journaling is a really great way, having some sort of regular journaling practice. Now, obviously, as medics, we're really busy. Our jobs are crazy. And it's really hard to find time for ourselves. But you can always take 5 minutes, either at the start of your day or at the end of your day, to just check in with yourself and think, how am I feeling today? What's gone well? What hasn't gone well? What can I do differently? And then it's about when you recognize that things are getting too much, knowing what to take as the next steps is really important. And this is really hard. This is really difficult because we're not necessarily taught how to look after ourselves. So I think in terms of the next steps, like, so obviously you need to check in with yourself and recognize when your stress is getting too much. Then I think it's really helpful to know what helps you. So that'll be different for everyone. So it's probably worthwhile doing a little bit of work on what makes you feel better. So, you know, it might be physical movement, it might be seeing friends and family, but also it might be making changes at work. So this is very difficult for us as medics, but it's about trying to make changes to things that you can control. So for instance, we can't control the huge systemic pressures on the NHS at the moment. We can't control, you know, if you work in A&E, for instance, you can't control the numbers that are coming in. You can't control what they're presenting with, but there might be other things that you can control within your kind of sphere of influence. So identifying what it is that you can do at work is really important. And it might be just, you know, finding some boundaries, making time for your rest breaks and making sure that you're taking them. Even if the department is busy, there's almost nothing that can't wait 10 minutes for you to go to the toilet, grab some water and just have 5 minutes out. Having, you know, a regular meditation or mindfulness practice, all of these things cumulatively will help protect you against burnout. But we also have to have a discussion as a profession about protecting the people that are in the profession at the moment. And that means really, really hard conversations about the fact that the NHS is under-resourced from a financial point of view, from a human resources point of view. You know, every area of the NHS at the moment is struggling, primary care and secondary care, huge pressure, huge patient need, and not enough people or resource. And, you know, if you have that environment, you can only do so much looking after yourself if you're in that pressure cooker environment. And so, yes, there are things that we can work on ourselves. Yes, you can monitor your stress levels and then try to make changes if you can. But if you're working in a really, really pressured environment, what has to happen is you need change from the top. So we need politicians, we need leaders, we need managers within the NHS to recognize that there are problems and to make real, genuine, impactful changes. And, you know, we had the NHS workforce plan come out recently, and basically it's all about getting people into the NHS. They want to shorten training programs. They want more junior doctors coming in. They want more junior nurses coming in, which is great. But at the other end, they're not doing anything to help with retention. And, you know, it's akin to having a bath and trying to top up the bath with the plug out. And so I don't see how anything that they're doing in with this at the moment to try to build up the workforce, I don't see how it's really going to help in the long term. I don't see that any of this is really helping burnout rates. And we need to do something about it because, you know, this is harming patients, it's harming doctors, and it's a completely unsustainable situation. So I think there's a lot to be done, so much work to be done in terms of systemic pressures. But until there's this political will to change it, all you can do is protect yourself. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I really recommend is therapy. So CBT and acceptance and commitment therapy are evidence-based in burnout. They are, I've had an intensive course of both CBT and ACT, and it was truly transformative. I cannot recommend having therapy more. So that's the other thing, you know, if you're checking in with yourself regularly and the things that you normally do to keep yourself well just aren't cutting it enough, then I would say that's a signal to either speak to a therapist or speak to your doctor, get some therapy, get an intervention, basically, if you end up in that position.
Thank you. And I was nodding along there at what you were saying, because I was at a meeting recently where I was representing the Medical Women's Federation, and there were some representatives from the Department of Health and Social Care that were speaking about the NHS long-term workforce plan. And I literally said what you just said, that this is great that we're getting more people and you're talking about getting, like, training more people, but what about all the burnout people that are in the system? How are we going to look after them? Because that's a huge problem that we need to solve. Didn't really feel like the answer to my question, but I'm glad that you asked the same thing that I did, because it's like, yes, that's great to get people, but if we're then going to burn those people out and we're not retaining staff, that's not going to serve anyone.
No.
So thank you. That's really helpful. And I wonder if you can share with us, Claire, your like things that you do to kind of prevent yourself from getting burnt out? Because I think, as you say, as medics, we're sort of trained to keep working really hard. And also, I mean, I feel like we kind of get trained to burn out because we get trained to do all these things. And just to get into medical school, you've got to do like thousands of extracurricular things and do really well in your A levels. And then you get to medical school and then you have to work really hard to get through the exams. But you end up doing it at the expense to your own health and to your hobbies. And I think, you know, once you are like in F1, F2, certainly for the first few years that I had working as a doctor, I felt like the rota ruled my life and I didn't look after myself enough. And then I think I had a bit of a burnout and then was like, okay, this needs to change. But it'd be great if we could help prevent people going into burnout. So I'd love to know, because you do, like, you're doing so many things and you're on the Clinical Entrepreneur Program, which I know you're from, and you're starting your startup and everything. And like, what kind of things do you do to look after yourself as well as doing all those things?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's huge changes that I've made to how I work to prevent myself from burning out again. And some of these changes are easier than others. And it's involved some very, very big and decisions about my career and how I work. So I recognize that I have a lot of privilege as a post-CCT GP. I have more flexibility with my career path and how I work compared to when I was a trainee, when I didn't have really any control over my rotations and where I was and the rota and all of that sort of stuff. So I recognize I'm in a more privileged position. But so one of the ways that I've changed my career as I've become a portfolio medic. So I can't control, you know, when I'm doing a GP shift, the fact that it's going to be crazy busy. But what I can control is how I work, when I work, how much money I get paid, and the type of work that I do. And that has been really, really key to keeping me well. And in having a flexible working pattern, I can work more when I'm feeling well. And when I'm not feeling so well, I can pull back. So most of my shifts, I book last minute. So I have some regular commitments, but a lot of my work is in the out of hours setting now, and I do book last minute. And that's really, really helpful for me in my burnout recovery. For people that don't have that flexibility and that privilege, I think it's about recognizing what you can control and making changes with those sorts of things. So for instance, we know that when it comes to burnout prevention, if you spend 20% of your time at work doing stuff that is personally meaningful, so that's different for everyone, then you reduce your risk of burning out by 50%. And that data comes from a huge study that was done in America on American doctors. 20% of your time doing personally meaningful work isn't a huge amount, actually. So if you're working a 10-hour shift, that's 2 hours out of your working day doing stuff that's personally meaningful. So obviously, as a junior, you'll have a lot of admin. You know, a lot of the job isn't doing the stuff that's really valuable, the stuff that's personally valuable. So, you know, whatever it is that you're doing that you love, you know, what gives you fire in your belly? What sends you away with a smile at the end of your working day? Is it time with patients? Is it doing procedures? Is it teaching? Whatever it is, try to get some more of that into your working day. And that will allow you to feel like you have a bit of control and autonomy, really, really crucial for burnout prevention and recovery as well. And it will help. Genuinely, it is evidence-based in reducing your risk of burnout. So yeah, so I think when it comes to burnout prevention, it's a combination of small tweaks and changes at work, getting a bit more control, a bit more autonomy, doing stuff that's more personally meaningful if you can. And then I think we have to prioritize rest. So again, as doctors, we find this very, very difficult. When it comes to burnout prevention, taking small, frequent breaks throughout your working day and then throughout the year is better at prevention than taking like a long lunch break in your working day. Hello, what's a long lunch break? None of us get that anyway, but and also taking like one long holiday. So if you can, ensuring that you get those regular frequent breaks in your working day, ideally without your bleep, but I know that sometimes that can be hard. And then also having regular downtime like planned in advance is really good. There is almost nothing that can't wait 10 minutes of medicine, unless you've got a peri-arrest or a resting patient, then of course you have to deal with that immediately, but almost everything else can wait. Pushing back and saying no, or just saying, thank you for bringing that to my attention, I'll deal with it later, that can feel really hard. So practicing your boundary setting outside of work in a low risk environment sometimes is a good way of starting to learn those boundaries. And then for myself as well, it's about learning to check in with myself and practicing the techniques that I've learned in therapy on a regular basis. And you mentioned there my startup. So I'm now co-founder of a startup called Bobby Chat, which is basically going to be a WhatsApp wellbeing coach. So taking loads of coaching techniques and therapeutic techniques and putting them onto it's an AI chatbot, basically. But what we're aiming to do with it is to share a lot of the coaching techniques and therapy techniques that I've learned on my recovery journey so that people can access it on their phone on demand, and then it will basically prompt you and take you through those exercises. Something like that, I would say, is going to be, you know, for burnout prevention, is really, really helpful. Just having some way of checking in with yourself. So yeah, it's a very early stage project at the moment, but we are going to be building that out. But basically, the reason why I'm developing this with my co-founder is because we know that people really struggle with this. And we want to create something that will allow people to be empowered to take control of their own well-being and to make the changes they need to make to stay well.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Claire. Thank you for giving us a really helpful overview of burnout. Good luck with the startup. It sounds incredibly exciting and a really, really useful resource. Where can our listeners find you if they want to hear more about what you're doing?
Yeah, so I am most active over on Instagram, where I'm at Dr. Claire Ashley. You can also find me over on Substack. So I do a weekly newsletter on Substack all about burnout, and particularly to do with the issues around women's burnout as well. So that's at the Burnout Doctor Journal. Those are probably the two easiest places to find me.
Great. Thanks, Claire. We'll put those in the show notes. And I do enjoy reading your newsletters. They're really, really helpful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Medical Women podcast. Make sure to subscribe for free on whichever podcast platform you listen on so that you automatically get our episodes. The aim of this podcast is to support and empower as many medical women in their careers as we possibly can. So please share this episode with at least one other medical woman. If you're interested in joining the Medical Women's Federation, we would love to have you. And all links to our website and social media are in the show notes. This podcast has been produced on behalf of the Medical Women's Federation by Dr. Nuthana Bayankaram and Miss Jenna McKenzie. Our music was composed and played by Dr. Kethaki Bayankaram. Thank you so much for listening.